If the bard is done with its mind-rending noise, maybe we'll go to the little $13 flip cam.
You said, that allows the DJ to jump in. Hit pause and go on with this from Andrea Lewis, SmackDown, Bugliosi, Kennedy Killer, and the murderer of Bobby.
Yes, we go now to the gentleman who's just walked in. Can you tell us your name and where you were when the explosion took place?
My name is Ezell Harris. I was just off of the bridge by Church Street when the second tower went down.
And what did you see?
It came down like a house of cards. There was, appeared to me to be a series of explosions, both on the top level of the building and on the ground.
Oops, wrong. Wrong track. Anyway, that's the serial getaway driver, Shamey. I think this is what I meant.
Persuasively says that it is beyond all doubt that Lee Harvey Oswald murdered President Kennedy, and beyond a reasonable doubt that Oswald acted alone. And there are so many theories. There's a Cuban connection, there's a mafia connection, there's, you know, various connections. But what about a couple of things? I remember seeing Mark Lane in high school. He came to my high school and talked, and we were all just like enwrapped by this guy because he had charts and diagrams, and he's one of the main conspiracy theorists out there. And a couple of the things he said that really got me was this magic bullet that turned left and turned right and struck Connally and Kennedy, and how could it do that and end up in this pristine shape that it was in. And you actually have photographs of the bullet and diagrams and all this in Reclaiming History. So maybe you could just break that down.
Well, Mark Lane is the granddaddy of all conspiracy theorists. He has no credibility whatsoever.
Anyway, I got to stop you right there. So we see what happens to people that catch the, the actual suspects in these notorious crimes that lead to the murder of millions. So, like, the $7 trillion we spent on the war on terror has probably cost us a couple dozen million Americans and at least a couple dozen million Muslims from starvation and outright murder. And some things are not funny, but back to this one that's really not funny.
Millions of Americans have died.
It's a threat Delta.
No, no. Millions have died who could have been.
Who's just walked in. Can you.
Right. No. That's the actual figures. If you look at loss of life, I mean, in Russia, the lifespan fell into the low 50s. That was 2 decades, okay? Of the same kind of shithook starvation tactic.
It came down like a house of cards. There was. Appeared to me to be a series of explosions, both on the top level of the building and on the ground. There were cars, there were trucks, emergency response vehicles, pandemonium. Pandemonium, something just like out of, you might as well call this Die Hard 4.
What did you think was happening? Were you listening to a radio?
No, I work in a federal building in Brooklyn across the bridge, and we're building a federal post office there. I'm a steam fitter by trade, Local 638. Our building was evacuated, and upon our building being evacuated, myself and some other construction workers, we rushed to the area to work in a federal building. The building was evacuated. The job was shut down, and the building was evacuated immediately. That was when the first tower got struck. So, and we could see clearly the smoke and debris, but the second tower was still standing at that time.
And so what happened with the people on the street where you were, Church Street, just blocks away?
It was pandemonium. People running everywhere, running for cover, ducking. A lot of people in shock. There was it was just chaos. I had to put out the little fires, which the fire department was. They were right on it. And the police department were right on it. And a group of our construction workers, we got together and cleared a path for the emergency vehicles to get in, because, like I said, there was debris all over the place. There was potential for gas explosions. There was smoke, asbestos, fire retardant, you name it, insulation.
And what kind of injuries did people have?
There were I saw a lot of gashes, a lot of flakes.
Let me ask the gentleman how easily the buildings seemed to go down. Was this a surprise to you?
As a construction worker, sir, I'd like to tell you that it wasn't easy for the building to come down. They didn't come down easily. That's number one. I believe that there was a series of explosions. I believe that not only did the aircraft come from the top, I believe there were some base explosions at the bottom. When we put something up, it's up. New York is one of the finest construction armies in the world. Our people are craftsmen, we're tradesmen, we know what we're doing. We put a building up, it's up. So for somebody to take it down, that's one of the reasons why I came across. This is my city and I build it. Anything happens to one of my buildings in this city, I want to know about it. I want to go find out what's going on. I want to volunteer my services to help any way I can.
You said you work in the federal building in Brooklyn. Who do you work for?
I work for a local 638. I'm a steam fitter. We are currently doing a project in Brooklyn. It's a post office. It is several federal buildings in Brooklyn. We are doing a renovation job there. But it's a federal building. Being as such, as soon as we were aware that there were. As soon as the word went out that it was a possible terrorist attack, that this wasn't, and we knew after the first aircraft, after the second aircraft, we knew that it wasn't an accident, because we know, you know, it's restricted airspace. But the federal government mobilized immediately to evacuate all of their buildings.
Opportunities, army opportunities. And the consistent reply, and this is what...
Tracks. Okay, that was the September 11th at the Tracks video from Greg from Tracks, and of course on the screen it says "Get U.S. out of Al-Qaeda." Now I'm gonna go back to the 9/11 Truth Festival from last night for a little bit and listen to William Pepper pick up on that thought. Well, the mind-rending part roars.
I have been asked this on this slippery slope, coming to the end of the slippery slope that started in 1978.
Everything's working. Oh, I don't have the FM. Okay.
And what it reveals is staggering. I took so much evidence under oath and filmed the deposition and insisted that the text of the deposition, the critical evidence, be put in the book itself. So no one could say, he took this out of time. That statement was misinterpreted. The actual evidence is there.
Feedback.
What?
Yep, feedback. Oh boy. Back to the Grand Lake Theater last night with William Pepper, keynote speaker. On his latest book.
So what it reveals is that Edgar Hoover used his number 2 Clyde Tolson to come into Memphis on a regular basis from the A's with the Dixie Mafia and organized the underground It shows that Tolson carried $25,000 in, and that money was carried to prison, regimes worldwide. Steve James has been profiled. And he had money was given to the warden, Swenson, and James was allowed to escape. And then he became part of the effect. He was under a handler who he knew as Raul, who I later came to learn his name, Raul Correa, and lived in ex-Portuguese intelligence operator who lived in Yonkers, New York. And he would leave his set-up job. We had a eyewitness evidence of all of this, including carrying the money to prison because the son of the Dixie Mafia leader, Russell Atkins, broke the prison with his father with the money. So that aspect of the case is very clear. Then Martin was killed on April 4, 1968. But not by the dump truck rule that was fired from the bridge. He was hit by a bullet fired by the best shot that the police force manufactured. Still was alive. Red Lake, nevertheless, on the basis of receiving $500, he came and sat down. We made him a little out of the physical information. But the only thing he would admit to was that his size shoe is 13.5, which is the actual size of the shoe that the flash of Paris has. And I'm going away from the shooting scene. But what he didn't know was that a 25-year friendship with another taxi driver, who knew him for all that period of time, caused him to reveal the truth. My informant jumped in the back of his cab after he had the lunch and said, "I understand Pepper's going to have you indicted on the King case because all the evidence now is clear." What are they going to get me
for something I did 30 years ago? Or knew about? Yikes. Okay. That was the second track, but...
Very clear about this whole might have died, but he was alive on the operating table in the emergency room. When the head of neurosurgery, Dr. Green, came in with two men in suits and said to the working team, said, stop working on that nigger and let him die. And I'll get out of here. He threw them all out of the room. And as they were leaving the room, the surgical nurse, who was the last one out, heard that gather up some sticks. And she turned around and she saw the three men sit on the body of Michael Caine. And then she saw Dr. Glenn take the pillow and suffered over. So Michael Caine is still in the emergency room at St. Joseph's Hospital. Oh, he might have died, but he was still alive.
And
now, the interesting nuance of all of this is that Green Land was the family doctor to the Atkins. And some weeks before the actual shooting, Glenn was meeting with the son of Marshall Atkins, the father and daughter. The son was working with the head of police and fire department. And sitting in on that meeting was young Prince, the same one who wrote for the Britons. And he remembered, all of this is on the road, and he remembered Glenn saying at that point, if the bullet doesn't kill him, make sure he goes to St. Joseph's the week in it. So we had that second witness in operation, the sworn statement.
So what he said was, make sure he comes to St. Joseph and he won't leave alive. That was Dr. Breen Bland. That was William Pepper from last night at the Grand Lake Theater. This is False Flag Weekly News. I'm waiting for...
What would you have them say, Karen, when they speak out?
Well, I think this is an opportunity.
An opportunity for DJ Mouse yesterday, September 11th, to write, no Afghan did it, because it had faded since April when I put that little piece of paper up with no WMDs, no steel frame building falls in fire, no Afghan did it, idiots. And even though it's a little scrap of paper anybody could walk by, and thousands have, nobody's reached up and tore it down in all the months that it's been there. It's the weapon station, 5300 Port Chicago Highway, where I will be next Monday at noon to stand in the way of explosives, as I did August 7th last month.
Opportunity for education. I think it's an opportunity to bring out the books, to get speakers, to just bring it up as an issue. I think that this is getting to be like almost as bad as Israel-Palestine, where there's this dead silence where people are afraid to deal with it, and you have to use the anniversary as an opportunity
KPFA,
to
10.7 dial was notorious
up
yesterday.
Discussion again.
Well, I think it's worse than Israel-Palestine, Karen.
Poor Bonnie.
Although there are aspects of Israel-Palestine that are just as bad. You're allowed to talk about the suffering of the Palestinian people in parts of the pseudo-alternative media, and even a little bit in the mainstream media. Open Truth, scholarly article. So this is good news. Tony, they can't marginalize you too much when we point to this and dozens of other examples where this has been brought into the mainstream of the academy.
And of course, it raises the issue in an interesting way, because many African countries, all of which have been colonized one way or other and continue to be colonized, even though there's formal independence, theoretical sovereignty, but not in fact. And the way these African countries have been governed is through false flag events that seem to demonize those that the U.S., that the Zio-American Empire doesn't want in power, and present those they do want in power in a certain light. And there's a lot of engineering false flag events along those lines. Same with the left. The left has suffered from Gladio B, was discredited in Europe because of these false flag events, a long history of which, you know, are well documented in Europe, NATO backing these false flags. So you would think leftists would be particularly attentive to false flag terrorism, and yet they avoid the subject and won't deal by and large with 9/11.
That's unfortunately true. So, hey, but before we move on to the next slide, let's introduce Karen, because this is your first time on our show.
No, I don't think so.
Amazing how many negative implications have emerged from this 9/11 psychological operation, now 16 years old.
Where I would like to see Gideon Paglia's work focused is on Gaza. Even in the early 2000s, there were a million people missing from estimates of Gaza's numbers. And with this siege is now coming to 11 years this month. It started in 2006, not 2007. And the fact that they've had no adequate water, medical care, food, the population is subjected to a slow genocide. I think if people saw the real numbers that are dying off in Gaza, it's their only hope for some kind of response that might open the siege.
Well, I will contact Dr. Paglia and suggest that. I'm sure he would be open to it. He is a rather strong critic of Zionism. He himself comes from a Jewish background, and he's one of many people from that background who are very, very serious truth seekers and truth tellers.
Those are the most powerful people.
Yeah, yeah, and we need more. So how about the next slide? Despite this reality of 9/11, this incredible destructive force that's been unleashed, what we're getting in the mainstream media and the educational system is big lies and propaganda for
90% of Germans disbelieve the official story, U.S. story of 9/11/01. Operation Northwoods, the PNAC, Pentagon's defense holiday, and all that. But I'm going to go to the classic case of false flag terror, jumping from false flag news to news bad. Let's say a scriptwriter approached a Hollywood production company with a proposal for a realistic spy action thriller that features a dark action hero who is a major in the Egyptian Army's military intelligence units, who is selected by an elite special forces unit in the United States Army, simultaneously gets recruited by the CIA as an operative, teaches courses at the John F. Kennedy Special Warfare Center and School, and is on the FBI payroll. Then he triple-crosses the elite U.S. military forces, CIA, FBI. Oh, remember in our previous discussion in this very MP3, there was the jury finding that the FBI, that is also involved, because it was Zent, okay, in Monterey, who called the Canadians to let him go so he could take the picture of the embassy, so that the man whose mama named him after the USA, Usama, could point to it. Okay, but back to the FBI. Uses U.S. military information to train al-Qaeda, another radical Muslim militant, becomes Bin Laden's bodyguard, all this while he is still on the payroll of the U.S. military, the CIA, and the FBI. Blows up U.S. embassies around the world while still on the triple payroll. Is the most dangerous man in the world, according to the U.S. Justice Department. Then he gets caught, is tried, and is indicted in a secret U.S. court behind closed doors, yet manages to evade sentencing, skips jail, and continues his terror operation around the globe. What do you think the production company's response would be? An unrealistic, far-fetched delirium, probably imagined and written while under some sort of psychedelic drug. What if I were to tell you that everything in the script above and some more is a well-documented and pause while the page rolls up. Government-confirmed real-life case. Meet Ali Abdul Saud Muhammad, one of the highest-ranking al-Qaeda terrorists, a man known to and marketed by the U.S. government and mainstream media as a notorious triple-agent terrorist, a man described by U.S. Justice Department Prosecutor Patrick Fitzgerald as the most dangerous man in the world I've ever met. Are you dizzy yet? Let's break down Ali Muhammad's background in a more orderly fashion. Muhammad was a major in the Egyptian Army's military intelligence unit. He enlisted in the U.S. Army and was selected by U.S. Army Special Forces, who sent him to special warfare school and encouraged him to pursue a doctorate in Islamic studies and teach courses on the Middle East. He was highly educated, spoke fluent English, French, Hebrew, in addition to his native Arabic. In 84, CIA recruited him to be a junior intelligence officer. FBI publicly used him as an informant for years. While in the U.S. working for at least three government agencies, including the U.S. Army, he helped train a number of jihadis, including El-Sayed Nosair and Muhammad Abduhalima, who assisted Ramzi Youssef in his 93 attack on the World Trade Center. During the 80s, while in these three U.S. government entities, he was involved in the training of anti-Soviet forces, which include members of the Mujahideen, Osama bin Laden, Ayman al-Zawahiri, and terrorist members responsible for the bombing of two U.S. embassies. In 92, he made at least 58 trips to Afghanistan to participate in the training of terrorist cells while under the surveillance of the CIA and the FBI. In 98, he was charged with the bombings of the U.S. embassies in Nairobi, Kenya, and Dar es Salaam, Tanzania. In 2000, he pleaded guilty to five counts of conspiracy to kill nationals of the United States and destroy U.S. property. Although indicted secretly behind closed doors, Ali Muhammad was never sentenced. Just as in the case of al-Awlaki, all court sessions and documents, all reports and all investigations pertaining to Ali Muhammad are highly classified and not available even to those TS clearance, with top security clearance. Unlike al-Awlaki, who was fried and turned into ashes by a U.S. drone, Muhammad was allegedly jailed in a high-security prison and has not been interviewed or seen by any outsiders. Because he is nowhere near any U.S. jail, he has been continuing his work and travels for the CIA NATO Operation Gladio B. Okay, now let's begin laying out the facts with links, documents, and witnesses. Read more. Oh, let me click that. With our taxes funding U.S. crimes and genocide in Syria, Yemen, Iraq, Libya, Afghanistan ad nauseum in violation of statute, common law, and constitutional right, DJ Mouse has been returning to block explosive shipments at the tracks, 5300 Port Chicago Highway, at high noon every Monday since the April 7 attack on Syria, and to protest the dropping the biggest WMD since Nagasaki on the same creation, our shadow army, falling across the post 9/11-01 hit list countries. And here comes the counter-recruitment notice. If waging war by arming death squads we bomb at the same time has not already damaged your mental health, you may wish to avoid the vehicular assaults, false arrests, illegal strip searches, and torture we already damaged by in Qatar.
The real education leaking out with the Arab American Museum.
Atlanta. I think if things like that were had a lot more publicity,
I would expect to find a lot of conspiracy theorists in universities, because after all, universities deal in theories. We need theories to think about knowledge.
And what's important about this story is it shows how critical it was that the political parties, the unions, and all kinds of social justice organizations were enough to represent him in this way. And I think that's a lesson for all of us.
What happened in Argentina is because of that country's peculiar history. They were under the rule of a vicious junta that was rounding up activists by the hundreds and even thousands and dropping them out of planes at high altitudes over the ocean to get rid of them. And they lost a war in the Falklands. They had economic crashes, and the people ended up getting rid of the junta. And so now when they try to go back to disappearing somebody, this happens. Boom. Well, you know, I think we need something like that here in the U.S.
Okay, so he was talking about Santiago Maldonado. So August 1st, he disappears at a protest. And then on September 1st, there's a giant response. And that's what that was about.
U.S. And I think this is how we're going to eventually solve 9/11. Our totally insane government is going to keep losing wars to the point that the economy collapses, at which point we're going to rise up and we're going to get these people, assuming they're still alive when this happens. So I think Argentina has mapped out the real path to 9/11 truth.
Oh, so as long as I got it up, I got Flass versus Cohen. Now, when I sued to stop the assassination of socialists in Nicaragua, that part of the Contra war that was going on in Afghanistan at the same time, arm of the Mujahideens, the same decision, Flass versus Cohen, could have been used to stop that that terrorist program. In an 8-1 decision, the court rejected the government's argument against the constitutional scheme of separation of powers. The government argued that the constitutional scheme of separation of powers barred taxpayer suits against federal taxing and spending programs. In order to prove a requisite personal stake in such cases, taxpayers had, and I was a taxpayer and I documented that in Getty versus Casey, established a logical link between their status as taxpayer and the type of legislation enactment attacked, and two, show the challenge enactment exceeded specific constitutional limitations imposed upon the exercise of congressional taxing and spending power. The court held that Flast had met both parts of the test. So that case is Flast versus Cohen's. It needs to be applied to the funding of these Abrahamic pedophile cults called Christianity, Judaism, and Islam. You know, based on this creep Abraham and creep David and all that crap, but where's the pause button on this thing? Okay.
No. ACPA, 2/3 of their people were displaced from that territory. This Trojan horse story is a very well written account of Britain going through a transformation. Britain and France especially colonized much of the world. And now the people in the territories that were colonized have come back into the metropolitan centers of Britain and France and are radically changing the makeup, the population, the demography. And of course, you know, there's this tension. Should immigrants be assimilated into the existing system, or should there be some accommodation of the new cultural forces, religious forces, linguistic forces, philosophical forces that they're bringing into the country? And this story kind of deals, yeah, I think, in a fairly even-handed way with that debate going on within Britain.
Yeah, this was a great story in a relatively mainstream publication, The Guardian, which is associated with MI6. So you can get good journalism every now and then in places like The Guardian.
Oh, yeah. So last
but
week,
this story was kind of shocking.
Let's go back to last week.
Good morning, Greg.
Thank you, Philip. The warrant for the Kevin Annett story, Hidden from History, that was heard by the International Tribunal on Crimes of Church and State, were just issued last month or this month. But do you think that might have played into the quick change of Pope for Pope, because Ratzinger was caught red-handed in that, you know, child abduction and murder case, along with the Prime Minister and the Queen of England, who was eyewitness. Hello?
Yep. Yeah, I think Roger's stumped.
Oh, poor. Oh, yeah, that was last week. This is this week. So.
Church of England. God save the Queen.
Are you guys? You guys have? Sorry.
It was similar to something that happened.
God save the Queen from the ICJ warrants. She was witness to the kidnap of 10 Native children, and there are about 30 defendants in the International Tribunal on Crimes of Church and State court in Brussels of Common Pleas, issued the warrants in 2013, added Pope Franco to the list when he issued the Omerta, when he absolved thousands of child rapists and murderers.
But in a Mississauga school with Islamic prayer recently too, but it's very disturbing.
But in Canada, you don't have mandatory prayer in schools, do you?
Well, they were allowing Friday prayer for Muslim students in Mississauga school.
Right. But see, here in the U.S., the ACLU has basically made sure that there can be no organized public prayer in the American schools because of our First Amendment and freedom of religion. You can't discriminate against anybody, not even the atheists and so on. But in Canada, you're still part of this British Empire, where in the UK, at least, they have an official state church, the Church of England, and they actually force everybody to worship in the schools every day.
So I'm just going to intervene here, Kevin, because in Canada, we do have tax-supported Roman Catholic schools. And we have a public system, and the public system is secular. But as when the system was being recognition that Protestant and Roman Catholic missionaries were clashing, that Roman Catholics were a distinct entity. And this, of course, opens the door to court cases brought forward. If the Roman Catholics can have a tax-funded system according to their religion, why can't Muslims? Why can't Baha'is? You know, why can't Mormons? And on and on.
Indeed. Well, let's move on to another case of false flag Islamophobia running rampant in the West. And here we have an evil anti-Semitic hate preacher. At least that's what Breitbart is calling him. I'd say Breitbart's the one doing hate speech. This is Sheikh Ikrima Saeed Sabri. He's the director of the Supreme Islamic Council in Jerusalem. And his views on things like the Holocaust reflect the views of virtually the majority of the population, including the educated population, including the people who've done extensive research and read every book by Faurisson and all the Orthodox history books, too. When I was in Morocco, every single colleague, many, many professors, and down to taxi drivers, I was shocked at the time to find that none of them accept the entire official Western account of the Holocaust. So you cannot expect people from parts of the world where they're actually exposed to both sides of the issue to have the same views as people here, where you get locked up if you have the views that are not legally mandatory.
So you have Ford building Fords or trucks in the middle of the Depression in Germany, and you have Prescott Bush funding Hitler to make him a player, where $50 million is real change when everybody else is starving because the banksters have called in all their cash. So that's going on. Hitler's being made a player by the people that staged the Jim Crow coup. Now, you complain about Nazis marching. Well, in 2000, there were roadblocks in the hood on election day. Choice Point stripped 90,000 blacks from the Florida polls. In 2004, the same thing happened in Ohio with Traitor Kerry throwing the race. And, of course, he was awarded by Poppy Bush's Mina Arkenstock hook stand attendance in the Opium War of the Endless, where the slime buckets of the Thames get to float their cannons into China's harbors and inject opium. And then so on around the world, the Pirates of the Potomac declared independence the year after a court in the UK abolished their slave trade. So welcome to the International Tribunal on Crimes of Church and State. Here's something. Sheriff moved to arrest convicted church leaders Bergoglio, Pachon, and Welby Vatican Crown plan counterattack. So we'll read this latest from itccs.org. Oh, hold it. That's 2014. Never mind. Uh-oh. Anyway, they're still out there. And back to False Flag Weekly News.
Locked up or thrown out of your job. So the American Legion is calling for a full investigation into Israel's attack on the USS Liberty in June of 1967. Wow, they've been working for this for years, and it finally happened.
Mouse Report fans may remember my interview with Don Pegler. It wasn't really. I just stood up and asked about Operation Pluto, and he mentioned Dead in the Water. So we went and sampled that along with playing his talk. Now, he believed the aircraft carrier commander who denied that there were nukes sent off to Cairo after the bombing, torpedoing of the Liberty. But, of course, you have cladding. Why are you going to put something outside a sleek fighter except to block the radiation? So, obviously, the commander lied to his friend, Don Pegler, who, after all of his friends, wife, and everything died, no longer had inhibition about talking about things like that. So now the American Legion is finally catching up to the...
This is a really important story because the message is that an American president turned his back on American soldiers in favor of Israel. And one author even claims that Johnson was in on it. So this is an incredibly important model for the 9/11 truth story.
Yes. There seems that there has been a very persistent truth teller in this story, Sergeant Bryce F. Lockwood, who seemed to be taking some credit for this. I was interested to read in this article that in 1984, Richard Helm announced that the American people were being blocked from the enormity and significance of this attack. This attack by the government of Israel on a U.S. ship, which is an act of war, and was covered up at the time. And some think that there was an attempt to sink the ship, that Lyndon Johnson was in on it, and blame it on Egypt. There's many theories. Now there's going to be a proper investigation. Good for the American Legion for standing up for the integrity of the veteran soldiers of the United States. And of course, it's appropriate that they take the lead in getting to the bottom of this story, finally.
Well, that's the good news. But then we have some bad news. Tillerson has...
The new twist is that criticism of Israel will be defined by this envoy as anti-Semitism. Yes. And interestingly, Palestinians, of course, are Semites, and Ashkenazi Druze are less so. So is Israeli policy towards Palestinians actually anti-Semitic?
Well, with any luck, there might be a court case that makes our politicians, it makes obvious that our politicians are Israel first, America second, because this is a real attack on free speech.
Indeed. Well, this this woman here, Hannah Rosenthal, has been training American diplomats to avoid being anti-Semitic by being staunchly pro-Israel and anti-Palestinian. And so they're going to keep doing that over in the State Department, apparently. And then how about this Taylor Force Act over in Congress?
The other headline. Tillerson Caves will appoint special anti-Semitism envoy who monitors criticism of Israel.
He was a good man. He wasn't doing this to get money for himself. He was doing this to recuperate money that his clients were, had thought they'd paid good money for and should have back.
And exactly. He was working for one of his clients. Norbert Schley, by the way, was the author of the Civil Rights Act of 1964.
Great man.
The way those things happened. It was germ warfare.
Tuberculosis was another weapon in the arsenal of germ warfare used against native people in Canada. A fiercely communicable disease, spread quickly by air and contaminated food, tuberculosis was responsible for many of the deaths of children in Indian residential schools across Canada. According to government officials like Dr. Peter Bryce, residential school staff deliberately and regularly exposed healthy Indian children to tuberculosis by forcing them to sleep and play alongside children dying of the disease, and then denying them aid or treatment. It was this murderous practice that was responsible for an annual death rate in the residential schools of nearly 50%.
We were in the same room with people who had TB. They didn't separate us.
Then we were forced to play with them. The nuns made us play with those kids. We didn't want to get sick either, but they were forcing us to play with those kids. And also They made some of them sleep with the other kids, too.
The interesting thing was at the University of British Columbia, where I began to study for a doctoral degree, I began to find these records from a report by a guy called Dr. Peter Bryce, who, he was head medical officer for Indian Affairs. And in 1907, he went on a tour of all the schools out here, like on the coast and in the prairies. And he found that, he claims that over half the children were dying every year from tuberculosis. And specifically from a practice whereby healthy children were brought in and housed alongside children dying of tuberculosis. And then none of them were treated or helped in any way. They were left to die of this communicable disease.
Why?
Because they wanted to kill off at least half the children and want to cull the numbers down. And Dr. Bryce, who, I mean, this is not some flaming radical. He's an establishment doctor who's reporting back to his boss, the Duncan Campbell Scott, who is head of Indian Affairs. And he said in his report, the quote is, "I believe that conditions are being deliberately created to spread infectious diseases." So he was clear. Children were being deliberately murdered by a practice of contaminating them with TB. That practice was referred to consistently. It's now even talked about in some of the mainstream academic books about the residential schools. So it's gradually been accepted, although it was reported on the front page of the Ottawa Citizen as far back as 1907. This is from Schools Aid White Plague. This is a discussion of Dr. Bryce's report. It's from November 15th, 1907. About 100 years ago, they said the average death in the residential schools in the West was 69%. So over two-thirds of the kids die after 1 year in these schools. That's talked about in the mainstream press, and yet today so many people are acting like, oh, we didn't know this. Well, I mean, it's been public knowledge for a century in Canada.
There's about 50% of the kids that died of TB. And one thing I can tell you, too, is that the chief over there now, her mother had 12 siblings. She was the last one that lived out of that school. She's seen 12 of her brothers and sisters go in there, plus herself, but she came out. She said then the other ones never made it home.
The Indian residential school system in Canada was an extension and evolution of an older system of genocide that began as early as 1540 in eastern Canada and during the 1840s on the Pacific coast. Its foundational purpose was the deliberate and systematic eradication of all indigenous populations that would not leave their lands and resources, abolish their own cultures and languages, and become Christians. That purpose has never wavered, but has assumed different forms and strategies over the centuries, adapted to the times and regions in which it played out as European conquest moved westward across the continent.
That's what I have to say about Canada today. And back to the Friday, September 1st, false flag. All I did was underline every. So I'll be back next Monday. On Sunday, there were all blocking the base for a while. And anyway, I'll get back if I need to learn more about that. But of course, August 7th, I've played that endlessly. I blocked a truck, yay.
Yes, and of course, you know, this is democratic politics being played out. Like this whole Newsweek to speculate that on the Nation article, or the substance of the Nation article, it wasn't a Russian hack. It was somebody within the Democratic Party who put it on a flash drive or whatever, a la, you know, Channing, Bradley Manning, and Cynthia Manning, and did it that way. But then along comes commentator to say, aha, but Seth Rich, what he got out of that is news.
On the morning of September 11th, 2001, 19 men armed with box cutters directed by a man on dialysis in a cave fortress halfway around the world using a satellite phone and a laptop directed the most sophisticated penetration of the most heavily defended airspace in the world, overpowering the passengers and the military combat trained pilots on four commercial aircraft before flying those planes wildly off course for over an hour without being molested by a single fighter interceptor. These 19 hijackers, devout religious fundamentalists who like to drink alcohol, snort cocaine, and live with pink-haired strippers, managed to knock down three buildings with two planes in New York. While in Washington, a pilot who couldn't handle a single-engine Cessna was able to fly a 757 in an 8,000-foot descending 270-degree corkscrew turn to come exactly level with the ground, hitting the Pentagon in the budget analyst office where DOD staffers were working on the mystery of the $2.3 trillion that Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld had announced missing from the Pentagon's coffers in a press conference the day before, on September 10th, 2001. Luckily, the news anchors knew who did it within minutes.
Osama bin Laden.
The pundits knew within hours.
Osama bin Laden.
The administration knew within the day.
Terrorists who committed these acts and those who harbor them.
And the evidence literally fell into the FBI's lap.
That a hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
But for some reason, a bunch of crazy conspiracy theorists demanded an investigation into the greatest attack on American soil in history. That investigation was delayed, underfunded, set up to fail, a conflict of interest, and a cover-up from start to finish. It was based on testimony extracted through torture, the records of which were destroyed. It failed to mention the existence of WTC-7, Able Danger, PTEC, Sibel Edmonds, OBL and the CIA, and the drills of hijacked aircraft being flown into buildings that were being simulated at the precise same time that those events were actually happening. It was lied to by the Pentagon, the CIA, the Bush administration, and as for Bush and Cheney, well, no one knows what they told it because they testified in secret, off the record, not under oath, and behind closed doors. It didn't bother to look at who funded the attacks because that question is ultimately of little practical significance. Still, the 9/11 Commission did brilliantly answering all of the questions the public had, except most of the victims' family members' questions, and pinned blame on all the people responsible, although no one so much as lost their job, determining the attacks were
failure of imagination.
Because
nobody in our government, at least, and I don't think the prior government that could envision flying airplanes into buildings.
Well, they didn't play this last night, but Peter Collins referred to it, and then he played 9/11 suspects to start with Cheney. So, of course, Halliburton was buying Dresser Industries, the asbestos connection, mineprod.ca, HTML is a great source where it talks about Wellstone and all the, you know, Carnahan, all those suspicious plane crashes, the anthrax attacks, and all that muscle used against, you know, by these guys. This is the front man for the Jim Crow coup, W, grandson Hitler's banker, son of Prescott Bush's son, blah, 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 blah. But anyway.
Except the Pentagon, FEMA, NORAD, and the NRO.
Oh, yeah. So, FEMA is led by Luis Giuffrida under Reagan in California. He was the head of the CSTI, where Kitson wrote up the doctrine, expansionist whites in a quest for power have stolen this land and incarcerated the inhabitants for the last few couple centuries. Only by understanding illegitimate violence has its roots in causes of social injustice that you can do your job. Lonnie Hancock, when she goes to the CSTI training before being out to lunch when I get shot, you know, by the rubber bullets fired by Matt Meredith, ordered by Stu Nakamurder, identified by Pat DeTemple, who does not bring the videotape, but the 4-inch bruise is in Getty versus City of Berkeley, County Alameda, and State of California, and I prevail, okay? Just like William Pepper prevailed in federal court over the federal government, because the FBI, that jury that fined Lloyd Jowers $100, which had to go to the family, who were the plaintiffs, found that also it was the City of Memphis, the State of Tennessee, and the nation of the United States of America that was their co-conspirators. So the conspiracy theory was found to be true in 1999, and you didn't hear about it because, of course, that's the year that Samori Markson got axed by the hijacker of the Pacifica 5 station magazine that had, you know, $50 million of our investment and all.
The DIA destroyed 2.5 terabytes of data on Able Danger, but that's okay because it probably wasn't important. The SEC destroyed their records on the investigation into the insider trading before the attacks, but that's okay because destroying the records of the largest investigation in SEC history is just part of routine record keeping. NIST has classified the data that they used for their model of WTC-7's collapse, but that's okay because knowing how they made their model of the collapse would jeopardize public safety. The FBI has argued that all material related to their investigation of 9/11 should be kept secret from the public, but that's okay because the FBI probably has nothing to hide.
There I was completely wasting, out of work and down. All inside, it's so frustrating, as I drink from town to town. Feels though nobody cares if I live or die. So I might as well begin to put some action in my life. Breaking the law,
join the conspiracy first and third Thursdays at Long Hall, 7:30 p.m.